Okay, so we are starting a new topic. One of the most interesting books of the Bible, definitely, I think, my favorite. It's called Kohelet, but also Ecclesiastes is how it's sometimes known, if you can spell that or figure out what that word means. It's what we will discuss. This is one of the books written by King Shlomo Melech. Anyone remember? Anyone know what other books he wrote? What? Tehillim was his father, David. Good, close. Psalms. What? Psalms is Tehillim.
No,
Song of Songs, right. Shir HaShirim, good, yes. Shir HaShirim, and one other book that he wrote? Mishle, Proverbs. So he wrote three books. Was he known as being, what was he known for? Like, what was his one trait that Shlomo HaMelech Solomon was known for?
Wisdom,
good. That's the one thing he prayed for, and he got it. And this is known as the book of his wisdom. In fact, the book itself, the word, it starts off, the reason it's called Kohelet, it starts off with the phrase, Divrei Kohelet ben David Melech Yerushalayim. How did I know that it was Shlomo HaMelech who wrote the book? How did I know that Solomon wrote this book? How do you know from that line? Yeah, but David had many sons. So how do I know that this is that it's referring to Shlomo?
He signed it.
Where?
I'm kidding.
Divrei Kohelet ben David Melech Yerushalayim.
He was the one that became king.
Yeah, the only son that became king, exactly. The one son that became king, it was Shlomo. It's just interesting, though, because in Shir HaShirim and in Mishle, they both say, that Shlomo wrote it. They say it was. They call it Shir HaShirim, they call it Mishle, but that it was written by Shlomo. This is the only one that doesn't say the name Shlomo, that he wrote it. But he's the only son of David who was king of in Jerusalem. It does say the word Kohelet is an interesting word. Kohelet. What does that word mean? Kohelet. It's not a common word in the Tanakh. In Sefer Malachim, where it tells the story of Shlomo, it does say, first of all, when it says that he got a lot of wisdom, he prayed for wisdom, and he got wisdom because he prayed for wisdom and not for wealth or other things, it says, V'kahalu al melech Shlomo. Everyone gathered around. V'kahalu. Kahal, that word. They gathered around Shlomo to hear his wisdom. That word, kahal, it implies that they gathered around him. And also, it then says that he was so wise that he composed many mashalim, and he wrote, he gathered all his wisdom into books. So where are those books? We have them in the Tanakh. That's the book of Mishle, Shir HaShirim, and Kohelet. This is really the book of his wisdom. And even though he wanted to be wise, he was also known for being very, very wealthy. The Torah says, the Tanakh says, Kol davar lo chaser lo. He didn't lack anything. We know he had lots of horses and wealth and slaves, all kinds of people helping him and wives. He was very, very wealthy. And so he was also known as being very wealthy. So he, in fact, there's a phrase, and lunch will be here soon, so I apologize. But what anyone know what it's called in traditional Jewish parlance? If you make a very fancy meal, what do you call a very fancy meal? Suda what? What kind of suda? You must go to Chabad. Yeah, that's a good guess. She does Mashiach, but what do we call a very fancy meal? Someone say, oh, this is a Suda Shlomo. Suda Shlomo Bashanta. That's if you see it. Hear someone say, it's a Suda Shlomo. That means a meal of Solomon. It means it's very fancy, very big, everything, opulent, amazing meal. So he was known as being very, very wealthy. And in fact, he had so much that why is the book called Kohelet? So the first source here it says, Kohelet Rabbah, Lama Nikra Shmo Kohelet, Shayu Devarav Ne'emarim Bekahal. He spoke to big gatherings of people. V'yavu Mikola Amim Lishmoa Et Chachmat Shlomo. People came from all around the world just to hear his wisdom. We know in the book of Malachim it says, like the stories of the Queen of Sheba from Ethiopia that came, and other places that they came all around the world to hear him speak. So one aspect of why it's called Kohelet is because everyone gathered to hear his wisdom. Another aspect, and also, he gathered lots of wealth. Another aspect, interestingly, though, he wasn't always wise. He wasn't always wealthy. He didn't always have a lot of people coming asking for things. He had a lot of vicissitudes in life. He had ups and downs. He suffered, and he had tragedies. If you look at the source here, the Gemara on the second page, where it says Masecha Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Amud Beis, 20b Sanhedrin, it lists that throughout his life as Betchila Melech Shlomo Al Elyonim. He was the king over like the upper worlds, over everything. That's why it says in Malachim and Devar Yamim V'Yoshev Shlomo Al Kisei Hashem. With Besof, eventually Melech Al Tachtonim. He was just the king in the lower worlds. Fine, that's enough to be king in the lower worlds. But then it says, next piece there, it says, and then he was Melech al Olam Kulo. He was just the king over the world, not just the whole, just like earth. L'sof lo Melech ela al Yisrael. Eventually, he was only king over Israel, though, not the whole world. Then it says, L'sof lo Melech al Yushalayim. But eventually, just king of Jerusalem. Then it says, after that, L'sof lo Melech ela al Mitaso. He was only king over his own bed. And he wasn't even king over Jerusalem. Just his own bed is the one place where he had any dominion. In other words, it finally concludes, Melech v'hedyot. He was a king, then he was a regular person. And then maybe he became a king again. It's a difference of opinion. But the point is, he became a pauper. He was someone who experienced great wealth and fame and fortune, and then he became very poor. And so maybe another explanation of why it was called Koheles, which means gather in, is actually because he literally had to go door to door. Hakil asafot. He had to go and gather in alms. He had to beg for charity. Makil nadavot. He had to ask for donations. Imagine, the person that was wise, everyone wanted to hear him speak, he was so wealthy and had everything, and then he became someone who was very, very poor and suffered. Now, let me ask you a question. This is a book of wisdom. Would you want to hear a book of wisdom of someone who was very wealthy or someone who experienced lots of ups and downs in life and struggled? What would you rather hear?
Ups and downs.
Yeah, for sure. Now, so this is someone who, yeah, he had a lot, but he also suffered quite a bit. He experienced the hard knocks of life. In fact, many times in the book, it says, Ra'iti, I saw, I experienced. Here's what I learned from life. I mean, it's not just this book of like traditions that he got from Moses or whatever. It's actually the life lessons that he learned of having had the experience of having greatness and also the experience of having suffered and experienced real, challenges and struggles in life.
Does Malachim talk about this?
Not so much. I mean, Malachim does talk about the fact that he was very great. People gathered around from all over the world. And then, in the end of his life, things got worse in terms of idolatry and things that in the kingdom didn't go as well. It doesn't get into specifics that, like, he had to go begging for money. But it does imply that after the first 40 years of his reign, things got worse. And then after that, there was a civil war when his son Rehoboam took over. So it doesn't give the specifics, but it is clear that he had a lot of greatness and he built this great base on Mikdash. And then after that, things definitely got worse. So that's another explanation of why it was called Koheles, is because it was that he had to actually gather in the donations. So if you turn to the next page, so now we have multiple explanations of the gathering that he did. So Rashi says, for example, Kohelet al shem shekihel chachmot harbe. In fact, maybe it wasn't just that he was wise, but that he actually had all sorts of wisdom. He contained every type of wisdom, whether it was mathematics or astrology. Like, he had multiple types of wisdom that he knew. But some argue, like Ibn Ezra says here, it might be that he knew too much and he became cynical. So there is also that aspect of it. So he's a complex person. He had all types of experiences. People are complex. In fact, the Gemara says in one place that the rabbis considered being gonez the book, getting rid of the book, not including this book, Ecclesiastes, Koheles, as part of the canon of the 24 books of Tanakh. The rabbis didn't want to. They thought about not including it. Why? It says mipnei shadvarav sosrim zeh et zeh, because it contradicts itself within itself. But let me ask you a question. Someone who's very wise and has a lot of insight and knowledge, but goes through ups and downs in life, where periods where they're very wealthy, periods where they're teaching and learning and studying, periods where they're very poor and suffering and struggling and having to beg for money. If they now share with you the things they learned in their life, do you think it's all going to be consistent and all flow perfectly? Or do people have contradictions in within them? And are there going to be inherent, you know, internal struggles and things that don't make sense? I mean, what do you think is more likely of a person who's very great but also goes through lots of challenges and struggles in life? If you want some pizza, if you want some pizza.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Appreciate it. What do you think is more likely? Meaning, is if he's very wise, you might say on the one hand, oh, it should be totally worked out and all even and make sense. Or you might say, no, it makes sense for there to be contradictions. Yeah. So that, because some people even went so far as to say, maybe it was multiple authors. Look at this Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra here says, V'hutzrach echad min ha'meforshim l'farish milat kohelet. Why is it called kohelet? Milat kohelet kamo kehilat Yaakov, like a community. V'amar ki talmidav chibru ha'sefer. Because it must be that his students wrote the book. Because there's too many contradictions for it to be written by one person. So that's what some argued. Now, he says, no, that can't be true. V'hinehu adam echad, it was one person. It was all kohelet. It was all Shlomo HaMelech. But the truth is, not everyone agrees with that. The Gemara itself says in the Gemara in Bava Basra, Tess Vav Ibn Aleph, says that Chizkiyahu, the king Chizkiyahu, one of the last kings of the first base of the Mikdash, the last kings in Tanakh, that he wrote Isaiah, Mishlei, Shir HaShirim, and Kohelet. So what does that mean? He wrote the books? Obviously, it doesn't mean he wrote them. Like, he wrote Isaiah. He's not Isaiah. But it means that these were traditions that were passed down, and he was the final one to, like, close it, to, like, either edit it or finally publish what he had so as a tradition. And some of the rabbis, some actually write that you see that it must be that, like, there's words, for example, that were not used in the times of Shlomo. They were used later. Or the way it was refers to silver. Silver wasn't used as a currency in the times of Shlomo, but it wasn't in the times of Chizkiyahu. And it's referred to as currency in Kohelet. So some argued that it probably was the traditions and the wisdom of Shlomo that was passed down to the kings, and many wise kings added to it. If you want to use this story, you can go right through here. Many wise kings like added to it, and this became like the Masorah of the Malachim, the tradition of the various kings throughout the generations, until finally Chizkiyahu HaMelech closed it and said, okay, here's the book of Kohelet. But so it's very possible, even within a traditional view, based on that Gemara in Bava Basra, that you could say that it was the core of it was written by Shlomo, but maybe the other kings also, there was others who added wisdom to it. Finally, there another possibility of what the word Kohelet means, it seems to imply something about, you know, a point in his life when he was jaded, so to speak. Because it says, Rabbi Yonasan says, Miderech Eretz Kesha Adam Nar, Omer Divrei Zemer. When a person's young, they say songs. This is, you know, Shir HaShirim. He wrote this when he was young. He wrote the songs of love and romance. Then, Higdil, as they get older, Omer Divrei Mashalos. Then they start to say, like, wisdom, mashallah, different interesting quotes. And then, his king, that's Higdil, his king, when they get elderly, Omer Divrei Havalim. Then they might become a little bit jaded and save some of the struggles in life that they've experienced. So maybe it just represents different points in his life. And that's why we have the different perspectives written here. It's also interesting that many people read Kohelet on, anyone know when we read it during the year? Sukkot. Yeah, I know many Sephardim and Lubavitchers don't read it then. But Ashkenazim read it on Sukkot. So why? Why on Sukkot? So it could be, first of all, that there was Hakel. Hakel happened after the Shemitah on Sukkot, and maybe Shlomo HaMelech, when he would say the Hakel and read from the Torah, he also said his aspects of wisdom. You also see here from Rev Shem Tov Gagwein, the chief Sephardic rabbi of England, that he said that according to that Midrash, which said that he wrote Shir HaShirim when he was young, and Kohelet in his old age, that therefore that's why we read Shir HaShirim on Pesach in the spring, and Kohelet in the fall in the Feast of Ingathering, which hints also at at old age. So, or that, you know, Pesach is Shir HaShirim, that spring. Ruth is Shavuos, that's the first fruits. And the harvest, and Kohelis is Sukkot, which is the holiday of ingatherings. So that is some background on the book of Kohelis, and why we're reading, why we're going to learn Kohelis. We have still another 10 minutes, so let's do the first verse. So here, anyone mind passing out? Here, I'll put it on each side. So that was the first verse that we just read, which said, which just was introductory. It wasn't really a real verse. It just said, you know, Divrei Kohelet ben David Melech Yerushalayim. But now we have the first actual verse. And this is a very, very famous verse, which is just really interesting. It says, Havel Havelim Amar Koheles, Havel Havelim Hakol Havel. Vanity of vanities, everything's vain. Actually, I put here the translation from Rabbi Jonathan Sachs's translation. He says, fleeting breath, Kohelis said, fleeting breath, it is all mere breath. That is his first introductory word. What's going on here? By the way, that word Hevel comes up 38 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. That's more than half of all the times it comes up in the entire Tanakh. So this is one of the themes of this book, is the word Hevel. And it's translated in all kinds of different ways throughout, you know, by different, it could be breath or vapor or futility or vanity or transitory or incapable of being explained rationally. Lots of different explanations. Actually, I like why Rabbi Sachs translated it this way. He explains that, you know, in Judaism, there's a lot of words for soul. What are some of the words for soul? What would you say? How do you say soul? What? Neshama, ruach, nefesh, right. Vayinafash, nefesh, ruach, neshama. So these words also all mean breath, to breathe. The words for neshol, neshama, neshima is to breathe, right? Ruach is like your air, your wind. So these are all the words for soul mean to breathe deeply. Ruach also means wind. So the words for soul in Hebrew, and also he says that this is true also in Greek and in Hinduism and in Buddhism, that breathing always is a significant religious act. Hevel means a shallow breath. That's what we translate it here as a fleeting breath. So what's Kohelet saying? Why is he opening the book with this verse? He says, you might think, he's saying now, he just said the last verse was, I'm Kohelet, king of Jerusalem. You might think that I'm the greatest king in the world, the richest man in the world, as we just discussed. He built the Beis HaMikdash, he built the temple, right? The most glorious building in the world. That was so much time. It was 400 years since they had gotten out of Egypt and they're trying to build this. He says, I've accumulated all this fame and wisdom, but in the end, we're all going to die. In the end, I'm the same. He's the same as everyone. He's just a person like everyone else. So what does it all mean? Hakol Havel means the whole life is mere breath. You can have everything, but if you lose your breath, you're dead. And it's finished. And that's the end. So Kohelis, he argues, is a sustained exploration of morality. And that's why it starts off with this concept of breath. It's all breath. It's the fragility of life. It should be inspiring to us, not depressing. That life is fragile and we have to make the most of every moment. Interestingly, first of all, it's interesting that he says, Havel Havelim Amar Kohelet. We just said it's Kohelet. The last verse just said, I'm Kohelet, king of Jerusalem. Then the next verse says, Havel Havelim Amar Kohelet. But maybe that's the point. Maybe it's saying, even me, even the richest person, the person who has it all, even I recognize that life is fleeting, it's limited. Interesting also, this double phrase, Havel Havelim. Why does he just say, Havel, Hakol Havel? That's right there, that's enough. Why Havel Havelim? Does it sound familiar, by the way, the other books that he wrote? Shir HaShirim. The other book he wrote, Shir HaShirim, Asher LeShlomo, it's also what it means, it's the Shir of Shirim. Either it means it's the most, like this is the song of songs. Like this is the most songy of all the songs. The songiest song. This is the song. Or it means, here's a lot of songs. I'm about to give you a collection of songs. So maybe it's saying, this whole book, I'm about to share all the havelim, all the things in life that we realize are mere fleeting breath, all the things. By the way, it sounds depressing, but I think you're going to see as we study this book, it's not depressing. It's real. It's deep. It's wise. But it's not depressing. And actually, a lot of it's very uplifting, as you'll see. But many point out that Greek philosophy, it's a book of wisdom. It's wisdom literature. But Greek philosophy might be about like, oh, let me give you a lot of wise sayings and wise quotes. But Jewish wisdom is much more than, it's not so much wise sayings, but it's more like it's asking existential questions, perplexing questions that like envelop our entire being, and just like asking the hard questions. That's Jewish philosophy. Let's ask hard questions and notice things about life and analyze them. And that's the aspect, that the approach to philosophy that it's taken. It might be, now I just pointed out that it says Koheles because it's going to say, who else can say everything's worthless? Only a rich person can say it's worthless. But then again, he suffered a lot. So maybe it's what he said, as was hinted at before, this is what he said after he began suffering. That's what it says in the first source there, Pesik de Rav Kana. It says, Hayumakino so bekana venosin the fun of Kairish Agrisin. The people, when they finally realized he's the king, they were like belittling him as he was going around begging and begging for money. But Osa Shahu Omar, and once he started being belittled by people as he was just became a commoner again, then he said, Havel Havelim. It's all, I realized, even when I had that wealth, it could be gone. In a nanosecond, before you think you have it all, and you could lose it right away. Or another, the Targum says, I didn't attach it, but the next source I hinted at it. The Targum actually says he was prophesizing. He wrote this when he was at the height of his wealth, and he was on his throne in the great kingdom. But he knew what happened to Rehoboam, his son. What's going to happen? Civil war. The kingdom is going to fall apart. It might be good right now, but life is a gagal achozer. It's a cycle. And when you're on the top, don't forget that you're one day going to be on the bottom, and you have to have humility about it. All right, so that's another theory. A couple more before we wrap up. We have a few minutes left. Just a few more interesting things about this verse, and then we'll slow down in the future. Today I wanted to get all this in, but in the future we'll really slow down and just do one or two verses at a time and really analyze them and dig in. But I also want to hear your thoughts. But look at this one. It's interesting. Koheles Rabbah, he says here, Ilu acher amar havel havelim. If someone else would say everything is futile, amar Koheles, haiti omar, zeshlo kanalo beis prutos miyamav, hu pirith b'mimono. Oh, yeah. Yeah, someone who's very, 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 if someone else would have said Havel Havelim, I would have said, oh yeah, someone who's very poor can say that everything is worthless. V'omer Havel Havelim. Ella, ze Shlomo shekasuv bo v'yitein melech et hakesef v'yushalayim ka'avanim. He had so much wealth in Jerusalem that it was like stones. And here kesef is used differently there than silver, as it will be used in Koheles. But here, someone who's very wealthy, if they say it's all worthless, then you can trust it. Like if someone who's very poor said, oh, it's worthless, then you say, yeah, that's because you don't have anything. That's because you don't know. Torah Tumima says on that, if you didn't taste all the vanities of this world, you wouldn't be able to say that it's worthless. But once you've tasted it and you say, you know what, I've had it all. And now that I've had everything, I can tell you, it's all just fleeting. The main thing is, we're going to see, as we'll get to later, the main thing is to engage in Torah, in things that actually matter, in your family, and things that you really give permanence. Interestingly, if you look at the bottom source there, so Mitzudas David gives a different translation. We've been translating it so far as saying, like, he recognized that everything in the world is just worthless. But Mitzudas David says, Amar Koheles l'bnei Adam, v'azhiram l'havil u'lahamisa t'havalim. He's saying, it's not that everything is worthless. He's saying those things that are worthless, make sure to treat them as though they're worthless. Meaning some things in life are not worth anything, treat them as worth nothing, and things that are worthwhile, those things you should focus on.
10 years ago, I heard Rabbi Lamson, he quoted the Chatzko Rebbe, who had his property. There was a nice twist on it, to say, Havel Havelim, Havel Havelim. The greatest vanity of all is to say, Hakol Tavel.
Uh-huh.
The way the repetition, he parses it differently. So vanity, vanity, vanity. Anyone saying that, who regards everything as hevel, that is the ultimate hevel.
I mean, if you see, the Kutzker is saying, if you see everything as being hevel, that's hevel.
That is hevel.
But you have to realize what's hevel and what's not hevel. Uh-huh. Very good. So that's based on Mitzvot David, or Mitzvot David is based on the Kutzker. But very good. Interesting. One last point, and as we'll start to wrap up. I thought this was really interesting. How many times does it say Hevel, the word Hevel here? No, in that verse, I'm sorry, in that verse. Havel, Havelim, Amar Koheles, Havel, Havelim, Hakol, Havel. Seems like it's five, right? The rabbis say it's seven. And actually, it is seven, if you think of it this way. Havel, one. Havelim is two. So that's three. Then Havel, four. Havelim, so that's two more. That's six. Hakol, Havel, seven. So there's seven times of Havel. Now look at this. He says, now there's a few different explanations amongst the rabbis. What are the seven things that are Havel? So number in this opinion, the first on the top there, Midrash Tehillim, it says, Keneged Shiva Yemei Bracious, according to the 7 days of creation. And then it goes through each day, that each day it looks like it's valuable, Hakol Havel, but it's Havel. So like, for example, at the end there, he says, Uman Nivra Bashishi, what did he create on the sixth day? He created Adam. Shenemar V'yitzar Hashem Elokim Es Adam. God created Adam. Uma Sofo, but what's the end of people? Ki afra tavel afra tashuv, and will end up being buried. Vamar Havel. So they said, it's Havel. Ma Nivra Bashvi. So what did he create on the seventh day? Shabbos. Is that Havel? So then he says, Choser Mistako Lakan Lakan. He looked around, Valite and Pagam. He said, I got to find something wrong with Shabbos. Velo Hayamotzi. He couldn't find one thing wrong with Shabbos. He realized, maybe it's not all Havel. Shabbos, there is value. There is value in life. But then what happened? Elakulo Kedusha Va'ora Menucha. Shabbos is fully holiness, light, and rest. Amar Yitzchak, Va'afa Pikein, Chazar V'ra'a She'adam Choteba. Then he realized, people are going to sin on Shabbos. Adam sinned, or it means we're going to destroy the world, whatever it means. Umeschai v'nashom, become responsible for our lives. Amar gam zehevel. So he said, even that is hevel in the end because we ruin it. So that's one perspective. That's a little bit of a depressing perspective. Look at this one. Interesting. Any of you ever been to a funeral? Have you been to a burial at a funeral? In a Jewish funeral? Anyone remember what the custom is when you take the casket from the hearse to the actual grave, to the grave? What do? Stop seven times. Unless it was Erev Shabbos or a holiday or a day where we don't say Tachanun. Why do we stop seven times? Any of the rabbis explain why they did that when they were at the funeral? I always say, one of the things I say when I do funerals is, it's our reluctance to part with the deceased. We stop seven times because we say we don't want to just rush and bury them. We just like stop ourselves. But there's another reason. The Gemara. Here, the Gemara says, Vavabasra daf kuf amad beis, 100b, Amar Tan Rabbanan. Ein pochasin mishiva mamados. We don't do less than, we don't stop less than seven times. Umoshos lames. We stop seven times for the dead, and then we go forward. Keneged havel havelim amar koheles havel havelim hakol havel. And actually, some of the unfortunate there say, and each time you stop, you say hevel hevel hevel. And the Rashbam here explains why. He says laharbos bebechi. First of all, to make you cry more. You're supposed to cry at the funeral. To say to yourself, what am I doing with my life that's a waste of time, that's wasting my life? And you're supposed to say to yourself, every time you stop, you're supposed to think to yourself, how can I, this is where I'm going to end up to, so how can I make the most of my life? In other words, not to be depressed about it, but to make the most of our lives. One other explanation, the Koheles Rabba says, Keneged Shiva Olamos She'adam Roe. Person will see seven different lives, seven different worlds in their life. For example, Ben Shana, their first, like a baby, 1 year old. Ben Shtayim V'Shalosh, a toddler. Ben Esther Shana, when they're 10 years old. You know, when they get married. Holid Bani, when they have children. Hiskim, when they get elderly. There's seven different stages of life. And the Torah Tumah says, it's laharos shekol tekufa levada kishi la'atzma hevel. Every stage by itself is hevel. But it's all together. If you see life as a marathon, that's all part of one longer process, it's not hevel. Life isn't hevel, but each part is meant to be connected to other parts of life, and therefore it does have meaning. So those are the sevens. I just want to share with you one last thing before we conclude that I saw this week as I was preparing this, and then hear any thoughts you have, and then we'll wrap up right on time. Basically, if Koheles, it is a lot about death, even though you'll see it's more uplifting. There's a lot of really positive verses. But who was the first human who died? Who was the first human who died? What?
Hevel.
Hevel. Wait a second. That's the same word. Hevel is the first person who died. So now, that was Adam's second son, right? Cain is the first son. Hevel was the second son, the same exact word. But he was killed by Cain. Now, Rabbi Sacks points out something really fascinating. When it says Cain was born, listen to this line. It says, V'adam yada et chava ishto, Adam knew Eve, his wife. V'tahar, she became pregnant. V'teled et Cain, she gave birth to Cain. And then why did she name him Cain? Why? What's the name Cain? Yes, V'tomar, Kaniti ishat Hashem. I have acquired a child together with God. Kaniti, I have acquired. The word for Cain is kaniti, acquire something. So what is Shlomo saying, Shlomo Melch saying here in Koheles?
You don't know anything.
Exactly. What do you think you know? Kaniti? The word kaniti only appears 6 times in the whole Tanakh, but 3 of them are in the book of Ruth. And kaniti here, how do you understand the Cain and Hevel drama? He says, you know, everyone says it's a symbolic story of brothers. There's lots of brother clashes in the book of Bereishis, but they were real, but they represented something conceptual. And what Rabbi Sacks is, it's the old conflict between the farmer and the herdsman, but in fact, Cain and Abel are metaphysical drama on death, life, and fragility of life, and the attempt to defeat death by acquisitions. We think, oh, you can defeat death by just acquiring things. And at the end of the day, Hakol Hevel. Hevel, it comes to an end. You're going to die. In fact, Rav Hirsch argues that the word Hevel comes from the word Avel, to mourn, and that's symbolizing that, you know, if you live life trivially and go nowhere, that you know that's all of life. But there's a great book, and I'll quote it throughout our learning. There's this great new book that I just got, this Rabbi Kurin, that Koren Press just put out, where he argues that, and the truth is the Gra, the Vilna Gaon already points out that that Hevel here, he was referring to Abel, he's referring to Hevel. When he says Havel Havelim, he's referring to Havel, but this Kurin argues that the Kohelet is the story of Adam, meaning Shlomo Melech, what he's writing here is like a new commentary on Bereishis. And he's trying to get in the head of Adam and say, what did Adam experience in his life? Meaning the best commentary on the Torah is the Torah itself, finding other places within Tanakh where it references it. So he argues that the book of Kohelet is trying to express, you know, we don't have many words in the Torah that Adam said. We'd love to know more about Adam, right? He's a fascinating character. First human, what did he experience? What did he learn? So perhaps Shlomo HaMelech in the book of Koheles is writing a commentary on Adam and saying, what would Adam have said? And he's arguing that this first verse is Adam bemoaning his dead son. He's saying, oh, it's all Hevel. He wanted to break free of the curse of labor by being a shepherd, a roe, and he emphasized in this verse, but he realized that, you know, that there's death, there's suffering, and he's mourning it. But the one question he struggles with is, why would they name their son Hevel? Because we always know that even when someone has a bad life in Tanakh, the parents give them a good name, meaning the name has a good reason. Cain, you know, the names always imply something good, even if something later than bad happens to them. So he argues that, it's true, his life ended in a futile manner, but they gave him this name. Possibly it had a positive aspect. It meant perhaps, you know, because they were twins. It was twins, Cain and Hevel. So maybe this was the first kids being born. They didn't know how this was going to work, that another kid was going to come out. So maybe when Chava had him, she didn't think he would survive. She was like, oh, another baby? He's not going to live. But then when he breathed, she realized, you know, Hevel, he has breath. She says, oh, he's alive, breathing, life. Hevel, name him Hevel. It's life. We have a chance. There's a chance to live. So the point is, Shlomo had this universal dominion, he recognition, and he identified with Adam and this prototype. And this book now becomes an explanation, a perush on their lives. And it shows that nothing's changed from the first person until now. It's going to share universal truths, and the book is a search for knowledge modeled after the tree of knowledge, right? It's all coming from the tree of knowledge and focus on Amal. You know, there's a lot of focus on Amal, on hard work, and the reality of Adam after the expulsion. So that now, hopefully now you're ready, that we're going to really dive into the book of Koheles. This is the background of what it means, and you'll see it's not depressing. It's actually a really uplifting, inspiring, important book to reflect on, as we will do each week.